Persecution, trial, and tribulation. The Church of God the Eternal presents the number 13 tape in this series of vital interest and intense concern to every Christian. Your speaker will be Mr. Raymond Cole.
Last time we were covering the subject, and I'm going back to it once again in this term trial, Tzarapht, T-Z-A-H-R-A-P-H. And we got to in point number 7, which was the purpose of trials. We went down through the third text. First we covered Proverbs 25, then Isaiah 40, then Isaiah 46. And I wanted to take a little time because I wanted to get into Jeremiah, the 10th chapter. So that's why I didn't go ahead and try to cover Jeremiah 10 and also Jeremiah 51 in a rapid fashion, so to complete this point number 7 last time. Jeremiah, the 10th chapter, beginning in verse 1. Hear you the word which the Lord spake unto you, O house of Israel. Thus saith the Lord, learn not the way of the heathen, and be not dismayed at the signs of heaven. And the word dismayed is the one that means don't be mesmerized by it. Don't be awesomely struck by it. Because that's what generally happens to people. If they see something that has a phenomenal aspect to it, they begin to idolize it. Out of the fear of that very physical commodity or whatever it is, they develop a certain mental posture. They're apprehensive, they're woeful, they manifest a certain trust or mean a certain respect for it or whatever it may be. God says, don't be mesmerized with any of these things, because it is from that very physical premise that the people of ancient pasts began to develop their gods and the things that they idolize and respect today. How do you think they developed the whole system that they have called the zodiacal system? Because they saw these patterns in the sky. And they must have been awesomely, emotional creatures and mesmerized by continuity or by a return or whatever it was. But the very physical features precipitated their objects or their idols of worship. Men looked up and they saw, you know, that certain things happened in the skies. So they developed the signs of the zodiac. There had to be a premise for it, a basis for it. So God said, don't learn the way of the heathen, the goyim, G-O-Y-I-M. Means strangers or the Gentiles or whatever. And if you will remember Michael Goy, the book that was written, why do you think he took the word Goy? The IYM is just pluralizing it. Thus saith the Lord, learn not the way of the heathen, and be not dismayed at the signs of heaven. For the heathen are dismayed at them. That is, the people of this world are mesmerized by these physical things. And if you think that we are 20th century and we have emotionally matured and grown up, all you need to do is remember the eclipse a few months ago and what happened over here at Goldendale, Washington. They virtually stood on their heads and everything else. What? Did you hear any of the TV programs? Where you could just see, they almost bowed down to it and worshipped it. What an awesome respect they had for it. And yet it's just a physical feature that comes and goes. For the customs of the people are vain. For one cuts a tree out of the forest, the work of the hands of the workman with the axe. And it must be going on today. They deck it with silver and with gold. Strange, isn't it, that they have gold tinsel scattered all over and silver tinsel? Strange that it could have just happened that way. They fasten it with nails. Well, unless they have gotten a little more sophisticated, in cases like that, they use bolts. And with hammers, that it move not. They are upright as the palm tree, cut down, dead, useless, but they make it stand upright, but speak not. Not able to do a thing, but they bow and scrape before it. They must needs be born. They've got to pick it up and carry it from this corner to that corner. Because they cannot go. That is, they can't walk. They can't do anything. Be not afraid of them. So that very tree is representative of something that human beings feared, worshipped, and respected before. God says, don't worry about it. It's dead. You have to move it. You got to pick it up and carry it from one corner to the other. It burns with fire. You got to make it stand upright. You got to nail it together. For they cannot do evil. That tree can't do anything one way or the other. Neither also is it in them to do good. They do only what human beings cause them to do. For as much as there is none like unto thee, O Lord, thou art great, and thy name is great in might. You know, you can't reduce God to a little tree that you can put in a corner and you can put nice tinsel on it. And when you get tired of him in that corner, you put him over in the other one. But they always get relegated to the corner, you know. Because you never want your gods to get in the way. Don't ever give him prime place. So you put him in a little niche, you know, where you can move him and make him do what you want him to do. And you can make him think the way you want him to think. Because you're the one doing the thinking. It doesn't. So you want to make sure that when you create your own gods, that at least they don't rub you the wrong way. And isn't it strange? When you talk to people, they all have their little gods because they know exactly what God believes. They're convinced of it because he agrees with them. Everybody else has to be wrong, of course. But it's absolutely certain that you know what God thinks and does because he would do exactly what you're doing. And as I've said so many times, if you don't think so, just ask yourself. Well, I'm, you know, applying that, tongue in cheek for most people. Because God has to be revealed. There's no other way to find God. There's no other way to know him. And when God is revealed, he makes himself known. And then the continuity of that knowledge is carried out in faith only. If then we do not hew to that which was given to us, the knowledge of God and of his perfection, his character, which is his way of life, then we have supplanted the true eternal God, who is unalterable, who is unchangeable, with a God that we have made conformable to our own image. The God we created. And that's what most human beings do. Don't think it hasn't been done. Oh, we've had more gods created in Worldwide Church of God than you can shake a stick at. But we've had just as many outside recently, subsequently. People that are creating their own gods. God Almighty said he revealed himself to somebody. The most important thing on the face of this earth, then, is to come to know to whom did he reveal that knowledge. To whom did he reveal himself? That's the only way you're going to find out. and it must have come to the people within, and then continuity of belief is a matter of faith. So he says, "For as much as there is none like unto thee, O Lord." You know, you're not going to package God up and put him over in this corner or over in that corner, or make him think what you think or talk as you talk or believe what you believe or practice what you think. Not at all. Because God is God from all eternity, the unalterable, immutable God. Thou art great, and thy name is great in might. Who would not fear thee, O King of nations? For to thee doth it appertain, for as much as among all the wise men of the nations, and in all their kingdoms there is none like unto thee. Take a good look into all the nations of the world, in all the gods that are served, and there is no such God. On the premise or the basis of what did he make that statement? The fact that there here is a God up here that has to be moved by human beings, that has to be told what it thinks, and it behaves on the premise of a human human input. In contrast now to a God that is not impressed by what men think, say, believe, practice, or anything else. He is the unalterable, eternal God that does not change. The true God. So here is now a contrast between the gods that are idolized, respected, and worshipped. And they are respected and worshipped because people bow down before them, are dismayed, that is, they're astonished. They are led by their own fear or misgivings concerning these very things, the unknown, in other words. But God is known to the people to whom he reveals himself. He is known by the very revelation that he gives to us. We can know that God. Therefore, we need not be dismayed. We need not be mesmerized by the unknown. Because we can know. Now, we do know that God, and it has nothing to do with fabricating anything on the basis of what we think, do, or say. For if it were not a revelation of the past, brethren, then let me tell you, the world exists in absolute darkness today, and no one, and I mean no one, knows where he stands, what he believes, or why he's doing what he's doing. If the worldwide church of God did not receive the revelation of God, then nobody knows where the truth is. You cannot have God's truth except by divine revelation. One of the cardinal tenets of witchcraft or the occult of today is this so-called enlightenment by which you, or that is, the means by which you can ascertain and understand by your own capability. It is the idolization of man's mind as it is developed, fabricated, shaped, or given image or shape or whatever by man's thinking. And he is told what he believes and what he thinks on the basis of men's input. Here is an example of it. They create them. They cut them. They make them stand upright. They move them where they will. But they're idolizing the mind of man. And why are they idolizing it? Because it is made in the fashion of the defiant, rebellious mind of Satan the devil. So all they're doing in a vicarious fashion and through deception is worshiping the mind of Satan the devil. Brethren, this world has not been left in total darkness. And truth is singular. If the worldwide church of God did not have God's truth, even from a physical, tangible vantage point, you tell me where that one body is. There wouldn't be any. And yet the Bible said there was one. Did it lie? To whom then was that truth revealed? We knew. Oh, brethren, I would, if screaming would do it, if shouting, if jumping up and down or anything else would do it, if I could just get people to hang on and to have faith and confidence in it. But only the faithful are going to make it. We can create our gods. And the gods are designed up here. I can tell you how many there are if you tell me how many people there are. Because that is exactly what God said. O Judah, the number of your gods are as the number of Judah. He said, who would not fear thee, O King of nations? For to thee doth it appertain, for as much as among all the wise men of the nations and in all their kingdoms there is none like unto thee. I don't care where you go. You can go to Plato, Aristotle, Einstein. You can go to the whole broad gamut of the greats, quote unquote, of this world. And there is none like unto God. But they are altogether brutish and foolish. The stock is a doctrine of vanities. Where do vanities proceed from? Men's minds. Men's minds. So these are doctrines of men's minds. And what is the stock? Well, you take the time to check it out, but it just simply means that before which they bow and scrape. What are they doing? They're going before their own minds. And yet God Almighty said that's the last place in the world you should go or trust. Silver spread into plates is brought from Tarshish, and gold from Uphaz. The work of the workman and the hands of the founder, blue and purple, is their clothing. They are all the work of cunning men. But the Lord is the true God. The Lord is the true God. Brethren, we have exactly the same relationship as those of historical past. They are still mesmerized by that little tree. They move around and they throw tinsel around it. They bow and they scrape before this whole thing. Even because they bow and scrape before their own minds. But the Lord is the true God. He is the living God. He's not a dead tree that's moved from one corner to the other and told when to speak or what to say, as he uses or employs the mouthpiece of a human being. He's the living God. He calls the shots. He's absolute. He is God in all that it encompasses. He speaks, and there is none who can alter it. He is the living God and an everlasting King. At his wrath the earth shall tremble. And it's going to happen. And the nations shall not be able to abide his indignation. But you would think the way they brag, they assert themselves, they puff out their chests, and they will defy and challenge, you'd think they had the world with the tail. But they're going to find out that it is an awfully short tail one of these days. When will we finally bow before God and respect that God, the true God, the living God, the unalterable, unchangeable God? Thus shall you say unto them, the gods that have not made the heavens and the earth, even they shall perish from the earth and from under these heavens. God's going to get rid of every one of them. And you know what those gods are? The creations of men's minds. What is he saying then? He's going to get rid of carnal minds in the process of time. He hath made the earth by his power. He hath established the world by his wisdom, and hath stretched out the heavens by his discretion. That's how they exist. When he utters his voice, there is a multitude of waters in the heavens. And he causes the vapors to ascend from the ends of the earth. He makes lightnings with rain and brings forth the wind out of his treasures. These are the functions of God. Every man is brutish in his knowledge. Isn't that what I said? Every man is brutish in his knowledge. That is, brutish means he's just stubborn. He's going to hang on to his knowledge. He doesn't know whether it's of God or not. He thinks it is. The whole world does. So they're like this couple, you know, that have decided that they have agreed to disagree. They're going to fight with one another. And they think that is God's system. Every man is brutish in his own knowledge. Every founder is confounded by the graven image. That is, he is awestruck by it. You know why? He made it. He steps back and looks at it and he says, boy, isn't that a marvelous creation? What he is doing is showing that what men make with their own hands is no different than what they make with their own minds. Some create ideas, and they bow and scrape before their ideas. Some construct with their hands, and they bow and scrape at the altar of their creation. Every man is brutish in his own knowledge. And what is knowledge? To know. The grasp that this is the product of the Great One. Yours truly. Look at that. Isn't that magnificent? That's how we have all of our gods today. That's how we have all of our ideologies today. How do you think the great socialistic philosophy came into being? Because somehow it just reared its ugly head up out of the earth? No. Because of fertile human minds, long before Marx and Lenin, however. It goes all the way back to the first child born on the face of this earth, Cain. Where do you think he got it? He got it from another spirit, all right enough, Satan. Every man is brutish in his own knowledge. Ponder on it. Every founder, that is, one who makes these images, is confounded. That is, he's absolutely mesmerized. And he stands in brazen awe by the graven image, that which he creates. So some create physically and others create mentally. But they stand in awesome respect. For his molten image is falsehood. His molten image is falsehood. And so are the conceptions that have come into being from the spirit of Satan, the devil, through the subtle, fertile minds of human beings. They're falsehoods. And a falsehood is what? Anything that is antithetical to truth, and truth is singular. And there is no breath in them. They have no functional life. There's no vitality. They're given their awesome respect because all they are is the manifestation of man's respect for himself. They are vanity. And the work of errors. In the time of their visitation, what he means by that is they're going to be tried one of these days. All men's thoughts, all men's gods are going to be tried one of these times. And you know where vanity is going to stand? Yeah, it ain't. It just isn't going to be. They shall perish. When they're subjected to the final test, they can't weather the storm. The portion of Jacob is not like them. What was the portion of Jacob? That's God. The true God was the God of Jacob. For he is the former of all things, and Israel is the rod of his inheritance. The Lord of hosts is his name. We better come to recognize that it is that God that has to be revealed to us. An awesome God. The term founder is the one, the same word. The founder is the one who is working on these things or creating them. He's going to try them. So God is himself going to be a founder one of these days. He's going to subject us as metal to those, the crucible of trial. Jeremiah 51 now. Jeremiah, the 51st chapter. And let's begin in verse 1. Thus saith the Lord, behold, I will raise up against Babylon, and against them that dwell in the midst of them that rise up against me, a destroying wind. And the destroying wind, of course, is the great trial and the great tribulation that is coming. And will send unto Babylon fanners that shall fan her, that is, to intensify the scourge or to intensify the burning. And shall empty her land, for in the day of trouble they shall be against her round about. So there's a day of trouble when Babylon is going to be truly tried. And what do we mean by Babylon? It is everything that is contrary to God. We have two things that are extant on the face of this earth. We have the system of Babylon, and we have its interface with God and with the truth of God. Babylon is the way of error, sin, that which is contrary to God. There is the way of God, which is the truth, eternal. Babylon is falsehood, the creation of error, vanity, as it is called over in Jeremiah, the 10th chapter, whereas God is the creator of truth, absolutes. And what we see going on is the interface of those two since the creation of Adam and Eve. And it's going to culminate in the last giant conflagration that is prognosticated just before the return of Jesus Christ, or at the time of the return of Jesus Christ. For in the day of trouble they shall be against her round about, against him that bendeth, let the archer bend his bow, and against him that lifts himself up in his brigandine, I guess, and spare you not her young men, destroy you utterly all her host. Thus the slain shall fall in the land of the Chaldeans, and they that are thrust through in her streets. For Israel hath not been forsaken. See, God is not going to forsake her, only momentarily. Nor Judah of his God, when God is yet going to intervene, because God called Judah and called Israel and revealed himself to them. They, for a short period of time, have rejected him and have turned to the way of Babylon. But God is going to come back through the awesome experiences that are yet to transpire on this earth and re-reveal himself, and they're going to come to recognize God again. Flee out of the midst of Babylon. Whom? Somebody's there, right in the middle of it. And deliver every man his soul. Be not cut off in her iniquity. Why in the world will you be caught up in a system that has ensnared this world? For this is the time of the Lord's vengeance. He will render unto her a recompense. That system is going to go. It's going to absolutely be broken down. But it is a system in which physically has been found both Israel and Judah, and in its spiritual counterpart has been found the church of God. And they're going to be called out. Babylon hath been a golden cup in the Lord's hand that made all the earth drunken. Babylon hath been a golden cup in the Lord's hand. You know, even God is going to have a part in absolutely driving them into the intensity of their own defiance and rebellion. I want you to retain your place here for just a moment, if that sounds strange to you, and turn back to Thessalonians. 2 Thessalonians 2. And you'll note something here. Beginning in verse 9, even him, speaking of this wicked one, whose coming is after the working of Satan with all powers and signs and lying wonders, and with all deceivableness of unrighteousness in them that perish, because they received not the love of the truth, that they might be saved. And for this cause, God shall send them strong delusion, that they should believe a lie, that they all might be damned who believed not the truth. If they do not really believe it, if they are vacillating, if they're moving laterally, as so many people who once knew and understood the truth are doing, God himself is going to send all those people into the strongest possible delusion. It is happening to many, many hundreds of souls out there that cannot get their feet on the ground and remain faithful to God. And God is going to pour out strong delusion upon them. What God wants is faith. Faith that will just stand tall and firm in the convictions that God has given to us. It doesn't have anything to do with me or with anybody else. Why don't we just forget about human beings? Let's look to the Word of God and the thing that we were taught, and to that alone, and hang on in faith and in confidence. That's what God expects. Because God did reveal it, and he expects it of us. Now we notice here's a prophecy of the very thing. Babylon, the system now. What is Babylonia? It's a system of error. You know, it's a strange thing over in 1 John 3 and verse 6. It is called the spirit of truth and the spirit of error. Whatever is not of truth is of Babylonia then. The whole system. It's merely understanding then what that total system is. So Babylonia then, the system of error, the spirit of error, hath been a golden cup in the Lord's hand, and made all the earth drunken. God's going to take a hold of it. The nations have drunken of her wine. They're absolutely inebriated with their own value, their own vanity, their own arrogancy, their own system. Therefore, the nations are mad. And you know, when they become emotionally mad, you can rest assured some strange things are going to happen. Babylon is suddenly fallen and destroyed. Isn't that what he said in the 17th chapter of Revelation? Babylon, Babylon the Great is fallen. Babylon is suddenly fallen and destroyed. Howl for her, the people that have had great reliance upon her. They have lived deliciously. They have absolutely exploited and taken every advantage of human beings. They have lived riotous and sumptuous existence. Howl for her. Take balm for her pain. If so be, she may be healed. We would have healed Babylon, but she is not healed. Forsake her, and let us go everywhere, one into his own country. Why do you think they are heading back into their own countries? Certain knowledge is coming back. God created them with national identity. God created them to be placed in their own strategic locations. God is the author of race and of nation. Then why are they hastening back? They're knowledgeable of the fact that they have attempted in every way to break the intent and the purpose of God in the amalgamation of the races. But they're going to head back. Let us go everyone unto his own country. For her judgment reaches unto heaven and is lifted up even to the skies. The Lord hath brought forth our righteousness. Come, and let us declare in Zion the work of the Lord our God. Make bright the arrows, gather the shields. The Lord hath raised up the spirit of the kings of the Medes, and his device is against Babylon. I'm not sure who are the Medes, because apparently whoever the modern-day Medians are, they're going to be basically responsible for the physical destruction of Babylon. And we know there's no cohesiveness. That's been characteristic from the beginning. After all, what does he show with respect to the 10 toes and the 2 feet of that great image? Part of iron and part of miry clay. And when it breaks, you know it's going to crumble in pieces. So it has the strength of iron in it, but it has also the weakness of miry clay. Medes. Who may they be in the modern day sense? The kings of the Medes, for his device is against Babylon, to destroy it, because it is the vengeance of the Lord, the vengeance of his temple. Set you up the standard upon the walls of Babylon. Make the watch strong. Set up the watchmen. Prepare the ambushes. For the Lord hath both devised and done that which he spake against the inhabitants of Babylon. O thou that dwellest upon many waters. See, international shipping, they are absolutely going to have control internationally. Many waters. Abundant in treasures. They've taken over the wealth and the value, physical value of the world. Thine end is come, and the treasures of thy covetousness. The Lord of hosts hath sworn by himself, saying, surely I will fill thee with men, as with caterpillars, and they shall lift up a shout against thee. So these are the men that are going to finally stand up, when God apparently is literally going to reach right down into the hearts and the minds of those people, and they're going to rise up in insurrection against that whole system. Whom? I don't really know at this point. He hath made the earth by his power. He hath established the world by his wisdom. and hath stretched out the heaven by his understanding, the true God. And that is in opposition to the gods that have been created in Babylonia, the creations of human minds. When he uttereth his voice, there is a multitude of waters in the heavens, and he causes the vapors to ascend from the ends of the earth. He maketh lightnings with rain and brings forth the wind out of his treasuries. Every man is brutish by his knowledge. Here it is, exactly the same thing. Every man is brutish by his knowledge. He's not teachable. He's a defiant, rebellious creature. He's not converted to the oneness of the knowledge of God. He hasn't lost the adoration and respect for his own, quote-unquote, mental ability. For he thinks he can ascertain it for himself. He bows before the prowess of his own mind. Every founder is confounded by the graven image. Founder here, once again, is the one who creates it. And it doesn't always mean the one who is created by melting of a, iron or some metallic substance. Many of them are the creations of minds. And as long as it is the thinking of that man himself, the metal is extremely malleable in his own image. But don't let somebody else try to work on it. For his molten image is falsehood, and there is no breath in them. They are vanity, the work of errors. In the time of their visitation, they shall perish. The portion of Jacob is not like them. God, in other words, is not like all these other gods. For he's true. He's the one God. He is the unalterable God. He is the unchanging God. He is the God who has spoken, and everything he has said is going to come to pass. He is the unalterable, unchanging God. And as I've said so many times, if now the God that has been designed, created, and perpetrated by nominal Christianity today is the true God, then he is no God indeed at all. Because they admit that he is a changing God. They have him doing away with everything he gave before. That doesn't make a God out of them at all. You see, they've designed that God on the basis of their own expectations. They wanted to get rid of the law. There are certain things they didn't want to do. So they made their God in their own image. And they said, now here's the true God. See, he doesn't want the holy days. He doesn't want tithing. He doesn't want maybe the Ten Commandments. So they've created their own God. All those gods are going to be revealed one of these days in their brazen falsehood. And then where is revealed man going to hide? They're going to stand naked before God. And yet, brethren, those who have had faith and confidence in God are going to stand fully clothed spiritually. What a blessing that is going to be one of these days. The portion of Jacob is not like them, for he is the former of all things, and Israel is the rod of his inheritance. The Lord of hosts is his name. As I said, if God literally changed, as nominal Christianity believes today, what do you think is going to be the attitude of Jeremiah when he comes up and he finds out that God didn't uphold any of the words that he gave to Jeremiah? Jeremiah's going to look at it and say, that isn't what you told me. I had to die in a pit for what you told me, and come to find out you changed the whole thing. How do you think Jeremiah is going to feel? What about Ezekiel? But more particularly, what about the Christ who really died? Come find out that he wasn't the true Christ after all. I'll tell you, we better come to recognize that God is God. That means he doesn't change because he doesn't make mistakes. He doesn't have to move in and alter some unique problem generated because of what he did. Let's worship him as God, the immutable, unalterable God. And that he's trying to make us into that image. We're going to finally bear that glory. We're not going to bring that God down to our plane. By conversion and by the very process of salvation, which Jesus Christ himself instituted, we're going to be raised to the level of God. If we can understand what kind of level that is. When we don't make mistakes. But I'll tell you, we can't get there by kidding ourselves we don't make mistakes today. And that we don't have to make changes in our own minds. We've got to bring those minds down. That's what he is saying here. And with thee will I break in pieces the horse and his rider. And with thee will I break in pieces the chariot and his rider, verse 21. With thee also will I break in pieces man and woman, and with thee will I break in pieces old and young. And with thee will I break in pieces the young man and the maid. I will also break in pieces with thee the shepherd and his flock, and with thee will I break in pieces the husbandman and his yoke of oxen, and with thee will I break in pieces captains and rulers. In other words, what he is saying, I don't care what strata of society. They're all going to be brought down. And I will render unto Babylon and to all the inhabitants of Chaldea all their evil that they have done in Zion in your sight, saith the Lord. They crept into Zion. Who's Zion today? The church. Behold, I am against thee, O destroying mountain, saith the Lord, which destroyed all the earth. And I will stretch out mine hand upon thee and roll thee down from the rocks and will make thee a burnt mountain. And then he shows how desolate they're going to be when God finally brings them down to this earth. Totally decimated. Point number 8. Adversity actually precedes the lesson. Point number 8, which is a subtopic, adversity actually precedes the lesson. Sometimes we always go through certain adversity, and then the lesson is learned. In Jeremiah 9th chapter, and let's begin in verse 1. This will be the conclusion for today. Jeremiah the 9th chapter and beginning in verse 1. Oh, that my head were waters, and mine eyes a fountain of tears, that I might weep day and night for the slain of the daughter of my people. And incidentally, he is not talking about the ancient at all. He is talking about the daughter. It is the prophetic type. Oh, that I had in the wilderness a lodging place of wayfaring men, that I may leave my people and go from them, for they be all adulterers, an assembly of treacherous men. God said, oh, if there were just some place on the face of the earth to drop them for a little while and go and leave them. They're adulterers. They're treacherous. You know what he means by treacherous? He couldn't trust their minds. They were defiant. They were rebellious. They were going to concoct their means of worshiping on the basis of what they wanted. Period. But they were going to kid themselves until the day of Revelation. And then they're going to cry, "Oh my God, didn't we do this and didn't we do that?" And he's going to have an answer for them. "And they bend their tongues like their bow for lies." All wrapped up in falsehood. They lie like it's going out of style. But they are not valiant for the truth upon the earth. They don't want any of it. But how they love lies and deception. "For they proceed from evil to evil. And they know not me, saith the Lord. Take you heed every one of his neighbor, and trust you not in any brother. For every brother will utterly supplant." You can't trust them. And yet there are so many people who won't believe that. Why, of course, you can believe the party who rumors or who comes and says, "Let me tell you about the ministry," or something of that nature. They always believe them. When I say, "Brethren, there is not one thing I have wanted, there is nothing I'm interested in except your salvation," is there any way somebody can believe that? Just to get you to hang on to it. But every brother will attempt to supplant. "And every neighbor will walk with slanderers. And they will deceive every one of his neighbor and will not speak the truth. They have taught their tongue to speak lies and weary themselves to commit iniquity." But we don't want to believe that. "Oh, well, maybe those people were like that. We're not like that." Then we make God a liar. "Thine habitation is in the midst of deceit." The only way we can really come to grips with anything is to come to grips with ourselves. "Through deceit they refuse to know me, saith the Lord." And it's a last day prophecy. "Therefore thus saith the Lord of hosts, behold, I will melt them." I will melt them. I'm going to try them. It's a prophecy that's going on, and I think right now. I will melt them. God has subjected us to the heat. And how most of them are failing is tragic. "And try them, for how shall I do for the daughter of my people?" Daughter, a prophecy of our day. "Their tongue is as an arrow shot out. It speaks deceit. It speaketh peaceably to his neighbor." I wouldn't want to hurt you, and I have such deep and intense love for you. But let me tell you, you don't know what's happening to you. I have to hear it day in and day out, virtually. "One speaketh peaceably to his neighbor with his mouth, but in heart he layeth his weight. Shall I not visit them for these things, saith the Lord? Shall not my soul be avenged on such a nation as this, or a people? For the mountains will I take up a weeping and wailing, and for the habitations of the wilderness a lamentation, because they are burned up so that none can pass through them. Neither can men hear the voice of the cattle. Both the fowl of the heavens and the beasts are fled. They are gone. And I will make Jerusalem heaps and a den of dragons. And I will make the cities of Judah desolate without an habitation." The next point, number 9, is the word of God was tried and proven. And I want to show you a number of locations with respect to this word, as I have on some of the others. I will not take time. There are just a few more texts now. And I think another tape or two will complete all the Old Testament background information and then we're going to be able to get into its application in the New Testament.
Persecution, trial, and tribulation. The Church of God the Eternal has just presented the number 13 tape in this series of vital interest and intense concern to every Christian. Your speaker has been Mr. Raymond Cole.